find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
This is George Christie, and I hope you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, welcome back, Verbal Shenanigans, episode 330. That is a lot, Mike. This is also our third attempt at starting this podcast because your microphone has decided to go rogue and do its own thing. You know, it's doing some weird Tom Morello meets Beastie Boys kind of vibe going on from your microphone.
Well, that's why I bought this microphone. I thought I would get the talent, but apparently it was all in the electronics. So
right.
So, like, I'll be touring the world, and then one day, like, the roadie be like, bro, we just misplaced your microphone. I'm like, well, there's my career.
So you thought, like, when you fired up that microphone, you'd be able to, like, rap and maybe sing like Zach De La Roca, or play like Tom Morello, but instead the microphone itself makes those noises.
Yeah, it's one of those like one of them movies where you're like, oh, I got no talent, and then you sell your soul to the devil, and everything comes from the microphone, and then you try to get out of the deal, and then like the microphone will just like strangle you or something like that.
If you could like pick one major talent, like what would you like? If you had the opportunity to sell your soul, I guess, would you be like a ridiculous lead singer? Would you be like an amazing actor? Would you be a killer musician, amazing comic, athlete?
I think I would keep it boring and just be like a major like financial person, because it's one of those like there's going to be no questioning about it or whatever. I'm going to live my life and nobody's going to be sitting back going, how did that hack? Do that so you, kind of deals.
Wait. So you have the opportunity to be like LeBron James, and you're choosing to be an amazing financial guy.
Yeah, I'll just be on the bull market, and I'll just stay under the radar, live my life, have my billions of dollars to leave to my family, and then when I die, I go to hell. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
Only you could make, you know, you have this amazing gift in front of you, and you choose to be like the best number cruncher ever. You could be, a rock star. You could be an actor. No. Yeah. You want TPS reports filled out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd be sitting back and all, you'd be slam dunking on ESPN. I'll be like, joke's on you. I know what's going to happen on the NASDAQ tomorrow.
I think I'd like to be like a stud pitcher, man. Like in baseball. Work every 5 days, just be, you know, just like a dominant pitcher. I think that's the life for me.
Well, I mean, it's pretty sweet, you know. I mean, it gets tense near the end of the season. Knowing your luck, like you'll be on the Mets and they'll just be like, well, we got to keep throwing you out there. And then your hell is going to be you have this amazing talent and then you throw out your arm.
Yes, but, you know, like I feel like if I... You know, Major League Baseball, their contracts are like super guaranteed. Baseball players like sit out for any reason. You know, I pitch every 5 days, make a couple million dollars, be at the top of my game till what, 36 years old, something like that, and then just ride off into the sunset.
I mean, it's not a bad plan, but I mean, my NASDAQing will be amazing where I can just. Like, whatever you make, I can just double, triple, quadruple that.
Either that or, like, to be, like, a just a monster basketball player that could dunk on people, like a very aggressive, like power forward that just has ability to just slam dunk on people's faces.
Sean Kemp and Xavier McDaniel, Shaquille O'Neal, just
right.
Kind of one of those. I'm going to post you, then I'm going to poster you. Exactly. I'm not going to do anything fancy. You slap my wrist, I'm still going to get the slam, and I don't care if I'm 52% from the free throw line.
Yeah, I'll take Sean Kemp's career and his coke habit. Like, I'll take them both if it's, you know. But I'm sure.
I mean, I'm guessing if you get the devil deal, that'll come with it. Like, you're going to wish you're going to be like Sean Kemp, and it's going to be great for about 4 years, and then you're in, like, Cleveland with a crazy drug addiction, talking about your dogs in front of your car and you can't make the team flight to Indiana.
Doesn't sound that bad. I think he went to the Magic at one point too. You know, he had his rounds.
Big guys always run around. Like, even like Shaq, like, as historical as career is, people forget he was like on 5 different teams at the end.
Celtics, the Suns, you know. I always liked seeing where he was going and like what his nickname was going to be. I remember he was like the big Shamrock or something like that in Boston, and I think he was the big Cactus or something like that in Phoenix. So did you hear like Doc Rivers is going to the Sixers, but like he doesn't want to be referred to as Doc down there because of Dr. J?
I did not hear that. Isn't that his name, Doc?
No, I think it's like Glenn or something like that. Let's see. Doc Rivers. Does not want to...
See, that doesn't make sense. At least he's like established. It's not like Haskins who took Theismann's number where you're like, do you think you want to like do something before you do this, kid? And nah, I'm sure it's going to work out. It's going to be great.
Yep, he's Glenn. Glenn Anton Rivers is Doc Rivers, so you might be.
I'd go by Anton Rivers. Rivers just sounds so boring. Like I don't think I can respect a coach named Glenn Rivers. I'd probably yell at him, even with his like background. I could just say, "Shut up, Glenn."
Yeah, he said, "There's only one Doc in Philly." I'm like, "Come on, that's a little weak." Like, no one wants you to be like, "Hey." Hey, I'm Doc Rivers. I'm Glenn Rivers. Let's go, boys. Joel Embiid. Let's go, baby. Like, no. You're Doc Rivers. You're pretty established.
Is it going to be like cancel culture where like some guys, oh, I'm sorry, Doc. No, that's not my name anymore. It's Glenn. Don't call me that.
Yeah.
We've been over this.
Listen, Dr. J, you're going back a long time now. There's room for Doc Rivers and Dr. J in Philadelphia. You think they care? All they care is if you win.
No. It was like I read an article, they're like, in NASCAR, they're like, do you think this kid Austin Dillon should still have the 3? And I'm like, Dale Earnhardt's been gone for 2 decades now. I'm fairly confident we can move on right now.
I mean, man, his son's been gone for almost how long has his son been gone now? 5 years? 3-4 years?
No, a little less than that. I mean, like 3 years, I want to say. I mean, he's been in the booth, so he's still out there. But yeah, I mean, it's just silly and all people hanging on to stuff like that.
Does he ever like tease comebacks, or is he done?
He does a race from here and there in the lower series, the Xfinity series. He doesn't really think a cup because he had like some nasty kind of symptoms from his concussions. That's why he doesn't want to like really kind of do like the Talladegas or Daytona. The tire and clips you and all, you could be flipping in the air and items like that. It's not worth it. No. I mean, he basically made his own companies. He has his own racing team. He has his own podcast, which is hugely popular. He's got a show on Peacock where he goes out to old racetracks that are expired. And it's kind of cool. Like they'll be in like the middle of the woods and like, you can see where the grandstands were, but like there's trees in the middle of the track. So he's got his money. I mean, the kid's probably,
oh yeah,
in like the easy 6 figures of value. So why are you going to go out there for a race.
Yep. Risk your health.
And just lose it.
Yeah, I mean, I heard him when he was on Rogan, and it was pretty interesting how severe his concussions were. He was, you know, really going into detail. I guess he had them pretty damn bad. But you know.
Well, he started having them. This was before we all sat back and said, okay, shouldn't mess with concussions. You know, it was still the, oh, my head's woozy. Ah, get in the car and do 170. You'll figure it out. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. Just turn left.
This guy's in the microphone. All right, seriously, like in 2 seconds, you want to turn that steering wheel. Like we've been over this, Dale. Did every 2 seconds, turn it.
Turn! Yeah. So I was thinking about our guest tonight. So our guest we'll get to in a second. But I was thinking about you know, he's notorious for one of the world's biggest biker gangs, the Hell's Angels, right? Which we'll formally introduce him in just a second. But I was thinking, like, what was it like the closest you ever like identify with like a group of people, like as far as like a gang? Like, would it be like. Like, do we constitute as a gang? Like, could we be the Verbal Shenanigans gang, or is there just not enough of us?
I think you need at least 4, and you need a couple nicknames in there, and you got to have, like, a regular routine. It can't just be, like, 4 dudes hanging out and then just, like, going to the hardware store or something like that. You need, like, the common interests kind of thing that bring you together, I think. To be a quote-unquote club.
So you couldn't be like the Mad Dog Mike Berlew, and I could be like, I don't know. I don't know what I would be called. But me, you, and our 2 dogs couldn't constitute as like a new biker gang?
I'd say 4 minimum. Like, 3 is just like a couple buddies, a few buddies together.
Yeah.
4, it's kind of like, all right, now we're seeing some formation. In there,
if you could recruit like anyone, like any person on the planet right now, we're starting our biker gang today. We're the VS bandits, you know, we're the VS bandits, and we got our green, we got a green leather vest on with a shamrock on the back with like little microphone pins on it, you know. Like, if you could recruit anyone, who would be like your first round draft pick to join our buddy club here?
I know we bring up his name a lot on the show, but I think Conor McGregor.
That's a good pick, man. That's a solid pick.
I mean, because the way I look at it, he's going to have fun on the bike. You know he's going to have a good time. When we go to the bar, you know he's going to be chugging. And if we really get into some serious trouble, like, I can sit back and go for it, buddy. Like, at minimum, even if it's like a brawl, he's going to give me at least 30 seconds before somebody breaks through that line. Where we can skedaddle if we need to.
That's a good pick. Like, he could fight a little bit, but he's really got the trash talk down too. So like, he could probably make us seem bigger than we really are too. Like the gang.
Like, just like, even not even getting into the fight, he will trash talk and literally be, he'll dare somebody. Seriously? You want to try? He'll keep on talking where enough, if you're not like serious, they'll be like, I don't think I want to mess with this.
Yeah, I could agree. I would, you know what? That's a great first pick. I think maybe we could use some muscle too, like some. So I think maybe the Undertaker might be a good, you know, a good guy. He's already got the biker look. I don't know if he's part of a gang. He's been in wrestling for so long. He's finally seems like he's wrapping it up. So maybe he needs a new hobby. You know, like a new belonging, because, you know, he's been around the guys in the locker room so long in his life. So maybe he needs like that, a little club or something to join in retirement.
See, I would like him. I would probably pick him a little later. Like, if we were picking who's going to be like the head or the face of the group, because he's got that look where like we'll be sitting around the table and like somebody said something right. And we can all just stare at the old boss Undertaker and be like, what we gotta do, boss?
wait. So this is what we gotta iron out. I'm not willing to give up ownership right away to the Undertaker just because of his...
But he's like that seasoned, grizzled veteran. Like,
he is.
He can't just be like walking into our group. Like, I think it's one of those, it's kind of like those deals where it's like, I come to your team. I want part ownership of your team. Like if Taker be like, I will be the one of the V, what were we, the VS Bandits?
Yeah, that works. That works, right?
Yeah.
That's our working title. That's our working title at the moment.
Yeah. He's going to come with a list of demands, and one of them is going to be like, listen, I'm going to be referred to as the captain of this ship.
See, I don't like you're giving up, you're giving too much ownership into it. See, this is why the financial thing is not good for you. You're giving up too much equity of our cult, our group already.
I'm not telling you what to do. I'm like, Connor, I could see him just saying, he's laid back enough. He was like, yeah, I'm going to join a biker gang. Like, he'd be that kind of, just out of the blue, kind of do it. Taker, I feel, is going to need some kind of, like, leverage in the group. Because, like, he was known as like the locker room leader in WWE for a long time. So I can't fathom him walking in and says, I'm good being number four.
Listen, but he also worked his way up, you know, this is a new club. We have to start with rules right out of the gate. Like we can't just be like, okay, everyone's well. Oh, Undertaker, you're big and strong and well-known. Here's the club. He's going to drive it into a direction that we're not even comfortable with right away.
I don't know how you're convincing him to come in, though. Like I said, Connor is crazy enough it would just be like, yeah, whatever.
Here's my pitch.
Taker.
Here's my pitch. My pitch is more like, look, hey, Mark or Taker, I don't know what you want to go by. Maybe you want to reinvent yourself. Maybe he wants a new name, you know? He's done the Taker thing for, 30 years, basically. You know, maybe he wants to be something different in the biker gang. You know,
I want to be like. You know what his original gimmick was supposed to be?
Wasn't it like Mean Mark or something like that? Like,
well, that was his WCW name. Do you know what he was going to supposed to be when he walked into the WWE?
I don't know. I think I've heard this, but go ahead.
Yes. So going into how long has he been in there? The 91 Survivor Series. They had a big egg that they kept on prompting. What's in the egg? What's in the egg? And the rumor is they were going to bring him in. He was going to crack open from the egg, and he was going to be the Eggman. So,
I think he chose the right thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if like that took off too, and like 30 years later, me and you were doing
30
this,
years later,
me and you were doing this exact podcast, like in a parallel universe, and the Eggman's like celebrated as like the best wrestler,
the greatest wrestler, the greatest gimmick of all time. I mean, it's not out of the. I mean, remember Kane was Isaac Yankum. He was the Christmas critter when he wrestled Jerry Lawler's. Critter? Yeah, like you can look it up. Like Jesus. They just put like green tinsel all over him, and he was supposed to be like this mutant Christmas monster.
Yes.
When he was wrestling in Memphis.
All right, fine. We can't get the Taker in the club. We can get the Christmas critter.
Pick number two is Glenn Jacobs as the Christmas critter.
Listen, we always, it's kind of like our podcast. We always go for like the number ones, which we can't get, but we get a hell of a lot of number twos on this podcast as far as notoriety. So the Christmas critter, that could be our... wouldn't it be great to just email him constantly and be like, I want to interview about Dear Christmas Critter and just completely don't acknowledge anything else he's done?
Yeah. He's like, you do realize I'm a mayor in Knoxville, Tennessee right now. That's good for you, Christmas Critter, but we want to talk about Christmas-specific items for the show.
Right. We have our Christmas episode coming up soon. You'd be a perfect guest. It might be a good angle to actually get him. But, all right, so the Taker, you know, remember the San Diego Chicken? We had him on. He popped out of an egg, you know?
Yeah.
He went on to notoriety. San Diego Chicken might be a good gang member, too, part of our club. You know, we had
it'd be the distraction.
Right. So you always got to have a fun, goofy guy. And so the San Diego Chicken. So we roll up five deep now. It's me. It's you. It's the Undertaker, Conor McGregor, and the San Diego Chicken. That's a great start to a gang, man. That's a comic book right there.
That's pretty solid. Now, Are we assuming it's the Ted? What was his name? Ted G. Gianellis?
Who? Oh yeah. Ten.
Are we assuming it's him? Or are we in this premise like it's a mutated chicken called the San Diego Chicken?
It could be him, but he has to be in the chicken suit. And okay. With the biker thing, like we don't like he takes his mask right. off. We're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah, that's part of initiation. It's like you take that head off, we take your other head off.
Yeah, like as soon as he starts to remove the head because it's hot after a long bike ride in the desert, the Undertaker's just like smashing his fist together. Like, no, that's not happening.
Time to be the Eggman.
Yeah, all right, so we got two dogs that will do. Will serve no real purpose. Like, they won't be guard dogs because my dog will just find a couch and just find that. Your dog, I don't know, might be just like scared or something for a while. So we don't have a great start as far as our protection, but you know, it's okay. But like, I was thinking about like of groups I've been in. I remember like one group would be like the closest thing I could think of like was like playing soccer in high school. That was like a tight knit group. Playing in bands was always like a tight knit group. Boy Scouts, I was really tight with Boy Scouts. But then I remember, like, speaking of wrestling and all that, I remember being really tight with the guys that I backyard wrestled with for a year or so. Like, it was like every day. That's what we did. We got out of school. We talked about our backyard wrestling federation or whatever you want to call it. But I don't know, man. I could see the draw to joining like a biker club. I could see it, like why someone would want like an excuse to go out, an excuse to get away from the wives. I don't know what the demand is in the Hell's Angels. Is it every night? Like, can you live a family life and just be like a Monday night kind of guy, or is it like nope, all day every day? That's it.
That is interesting. Are there part time angels? I mean that. That sounds
good.
Less
good
badass.
Name. Good name for our club, the Part Time Angels.
Yeah, I mean, we're not all about the ruckus all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do the podcast. You know, there's sometimes lakefront comedy shows, but you know, every other Tuesday, then we get on those Harleys and we just
make
a ruckus.
Like men, a lot of men play like in softball leagues and different things to. You know, get out with the guys and whatnot. Maybe we just do part-time angels, you know, where we have a biker club every other Monday of the month, you know?
I feel we also need, like, a patsy in the group. Like, somebody we don't really like who begs to come into the group and we just add them so when stuff goes down, we can, like, if we do, like, a big heist, we can pin it on that guy. Or if there's a brawl we don't want to deal with.
I got a perfect guy for that. Perfect guy.
All right.
Cooper Manning. He's always wants the spotlight. You know, he's trying to get it. He wants to be accepted finally. We just kind of do what his brothers do. Just keep him at bay a little bit. And like he could be a great addition.
I was thinking Chris Christie.
No.
I mean,
no.
I mean, we need a fat biker. There's always one that's like overweight. Hear me out. Hear me out.
I hate that man. I hate him already.
That's the point.
There's already problems in the club.
But hear me out. Hear me out on this. Like anytime he speaks up, you being the leader, or if Mark Calloway takes over, we're just going to give him a look.
Right.
Or like just punch him in the face and he's like, shut up, Chris. And like, he'll just be the little yes, sir. And like the follower that he is. And like I said, when stuff goes down, if we're like, hey, there's like a 90% chance like the rival gang's going to show up or the cops are going to show up or something. We'd be like, Chris, we got a very special assignment for you.
Go and block the bridge.
Something where he's like right in the opening, you know, something where he thinks he's like the lookout, but all along he's the target.
We could be like, Chris, go block the bridge again, you know, like before, slow him down a little bit, you know.
Guys that never did it. Shut up, Chris.
As long as we could pick on him a lot. Like, because that's going to be like a lot. Like
that's what I mean.
Take what he did his entire political career and do it back to him. You know, pick on him, make him feel worthless, you know, pick on the little guy. He has to be like, it's got to take him years to get in. And really, like, everyone in the club has to know that there's no chance of him actually getting in. Like, no one's really taking him serious.
Yeah. We'll have an initiation where we put a lawn chair in the middle of the desert and have him sit out there for 12 hours.
All right. I see where you're going.
What I mean? The gang is having fun. He's a part of the group, but he's really not part of the group. And we got the perfect patsy.
All right.
We will never care. He gets 20 to life. We'll be like, good luck, buddy. Spread the word of the part-time angels.
All right. It could be up for discussion at the first meeting. I'll put it that way. But
I'll bring it up with our leader, Mark Calloway.
that's fine. There's no doubt he would win in the first 4 minutes of taking over the club. But let's get to a guy who can really talk this game and has a world's worth of experience as far as the Hell's Angel, and just has lived quite an interesting life, from solitary confinement to dealing with JFK and just a million different things. Former leader of the Hell's Angels, we're going to call George Christie, and I believe we're calling him from Spain. So without further ado, let's get George Christie on the line. Thanks for joining us and giving it a few minutes. How did you, I guess I got to start. How did you even, you know, how did you end up in Spain?
Well, you know, I came home, went to prison in Texas, and I got indicted in 2011.
Right.
And my daughter and another lawyer worked on the case, and I finally, in 2013, we resolved it. I was on house arrest the whole time, and I went to Texas. And when I was in prison in Texas, or was it Latuna Prison, I started getting phone calls from the History Channel. They were calling the prison. They wanted to talk to me, and, which caused a big uproar. And they told the History Channel to stay away from the prison. We don't want you here. Don't come here. And they called me, you know, prison's like a college. I had my own counselor. And the counselor called me in and he said, you need to get a hold of those people at the History Channel and tell them stop bugging us here. And I just said, hey, that's not my job, that's your job. And so I got a hold of my daughter, who was my attorney, and I said, Mariah, you need to get a hold of the History Channel and tell them they're flipping out here. So Mariah arranged it. When I got back into California, the History Channel producer showed up within a couple of days, and she started negotiating a deal for the Outlaw Chronicles.
Right.
When I was in, excuse me?
Nope, nothing here.
when I was in New York filming the Outlaw Chronicles, I was approached by a literary agent, a really high-profile literary agent. Whether you like him or you don't like him, she also represented President Obama at the time.
Right.
Her name was Jane Pistol. And, you know, she met with me, and she asked me, said, do you think you can write a book? And, you know, I said, well, I can write it if you've got an editor. So we cut a deal, and and I wrote a second book. Now, the second book, what's interesting is the publishing companies rejected it. But that's the book that the television producers liked. And I received an email. I get a lot of bizarre mail, emails, you know, Facebook stuff. And I get a lot of hate mail sometimes. And I, you know, if it's entertaining enough, I answer it. So I answered this guy thinking, well, what the hell? And answering that email got me here in Spain. I developed a relationship with this studio head. It's a funny story because he told me, you know, he wanted to do this and he had this vision for the book. And he asked me how I saw it. He wanted to make some changes. And I said, you know, I see where you're coming from, and yeah, I don't have a problem with that. And then I told him, I said, you know, I got a lot of baggage with me that I carry. And I said, when you get to the studio executives, I go, I think you're going to have a problem. And he started laughing, and I go, what are you laughing at? He goes, oh, I forgot to tell you. He goes, I'm the studio head. So, We went right around that obstacle. And, you know, we started talking and negotiating. And last October, I flew to Spain. And I've been here almost a year. This coming month, it'll be 1 year. In about 15 days, it'll be a year. And I just love it here.
Huh.
It's incredible.
Interesting where life takes you.
It is interesting.
So, George, I mean, let's talk about your history and everything. I mean, let's go back to, like, 66, when you first got that motorcycle of yours. Where were you in life? Were you, like, established with a job? Were you kind of still, like, young and figuring out life? What was George Christie like back then?
Well, George Christie was trying to figure out where he fit in. I had joined a Marine Reserve rifle unit and had gone to boot camp, and I had come back, and I was having a problem with the authority in the Marine Corps, and I wound up getting a motorcycle, and from there, I started running with, you know, I was attending my reserve meetings, doing my reserve time, you know, going on my summer stuff and active duty and whatnot. And this went on for a few years. And I started running with the Question Marks, which was a 1% motorcycle club in the Ventura area, endorsed by the other 1% clubs, the Hells Angels and the Saint Slaves and Straight Satans and whatnot. They introduced me to the Saint and Slaves, and I started hanging out with them, and they introduced me to the Hells Angels. And I started running with these different outlaw bike clubs, and then in the mid-70s, I finally made a commitment. Now, what had happened is I'd had some disciplinary problems in the Marines, and I wound up discharging out of the Marines, and I went to work for the Department of Defense. And I was actually...
Really?
Leader of the Los Angeles Hells Angels when I worked for the Department of Defense, and I had a top security clearance.
Wow.
And so I had an interesting life, and I'll, you know, it's interesting. They used to take me out to San Nicolas Island, Santa Cruz Island. During the Cold War, there was a lot of secret installations out there, and on Santa Cruz Island, there was a big submarine surveillance system looking for Russian submarines all the time, and I was one of the two guys that was, our duty was to keep the open lines to Washington. So if indeed, you know, they located some Russian subs, they could get the okay, from, Washington as, you know, to what to do, how to handle it. And somebody found out I was running with the Hells Angels, and they found out I was the leader, and I got called in, and, you know, getting fired from the government's kind of a rough job, but they can make a rough on you. And what the supervisors told me was they were going to take away my security clearance, and I would wind up sitting in the line house all day long on Point Dugu Naval Air Station. So I basically just said adios, fellas. And I, at that point, that was in 1976, I, you know, kind of made a full commitment to the outlaw lifestyle and the Hells Angels.
That kind of leads me in a question, like, how, like when you join a club, you know, such as Hell's Angels or any of the other ones you were mentioning, is it a gradual thing where you start and hang out or you pique your interest in one of them? Like, how does it start to become, like you said, you became a full member? What is the, like, the lead in time with that?
Well, it can be up to 2 years, as long as 10 years. You know, I did a very gradual, I made sure that, you know, I wanted to make this commitment to this lifestyle that I was going to stay on board. You know, when I wound up running with the Angels for 40 years, and I actually had 10 years prior to that, so I kind of lived in that outlaw lifestyle for 50 years.
Jeez.
So what really
I'm still
is that?
In one piece.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that life exactly like? Is it like the like Sons of Anarchy or whatever, where like every day it's like, all right, we got a heist or we're going to do this or that. Is there days where you're just sitting back having a beer saying, ah, I like driving motorcycles? I mean, where's the
initially, it was all about the bikes and the brotherhood. And as we started gaining more and more interest through law enforcement and different agencies, it became a cat and mouse game on a daily basis. And, you know, it became survival for some of us, and especially the leaders. You know, they seem to target the leaders. You know, the first time I got indicted was 1986 for a murder that never happened, a conspiracy they claimed, and you know, the FBI actually orchestrated the whole thing. You know, the jury found me not guilty, and they actually sent a note to the judge. They wanted to do something to the agents, you know, because they had blatantly lied in the way they handled themselves. And, you know, that really created animosity between me and the FBI agents. And I remember after I beat the trial, I got the not guilty. One of the agents said to me, my lawyer, I will catch up to you down the road. And, you know, it took them 30 years to get me, but, you know, they pursued me for a long time. And, you know, 2001, I got indicted for a 59-count state racketeering case. They overcharged me, and it basically collapsed under its own weight. I wound up pleading guilty. I pled nolo contendere to conspiracy and a tax charge, and they dropped 57 counts.
Jeez.
I kind of just gave them a piece of me. But it cost me a year in solitary confinement, you know, as I was awaiting trial.
I saw that in your bio. I was going to ask you about it. What, like, how do you get through a year of solitary? Like, it sounds like the worst possible thing.
It's terrible. It's sensory deprivation. You know, they never turn the lights off. The air conditioning is on all the time. You're freezing. And if you get in trouble while you're in solitary confinement, they move you to a different location. And they put you on a disciplinary diet, which I was on for a while. They only feed you twice a day. They don't allow it anymore. You know, they did a bunch of writs and finally got it outlawed after I had left. But, you know, you eat just enough food to sustain you. They feed you twice a day. And, you know, the cool guards would sneak a milk into you when they fed you. Not-so-cool guards would, you know, just give you water with your... You get a little piece of meatloaf that has carbs and protein in it. It's just, it's terrible. And they take all your mail away, all your reading material away. They give you a St. James, I guess that's what it is, St. James Version Bible. And that's the only thing you've got. You just, you stay in there, and there's nothing there. And, you know, it's a terrible existence. And, you know, after you're there for a while, I was in probably this seventh or eighth month. The physicians called me out, and this is an insidious part of the whole solitary system. They said, look, you've been in isolation now for 8 months. You're eligible for psych meds. And I said, well, why would you put me in a situation where you know I'm going to need psych meds at some point in time?
Oh, man.
Well, we wanted to give you good news. I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you know, I said, can you give me some LSD or something? I don't want those psych meds. I want my own psych meds. I got from the Grateful Dead their heyday.
Now, you became the president of the Hells Angels in 76, and from what I'm reading up, it only took 6 months. We always hear, like, you know, the brotherhood and everything like that. So I'm kind of surprised. How's there such a quick turnaround? Were you just so embedded that they had to raise you, or did something come around where they just, like, we choose you?
We were in the middle of a confrontation with another motorcycle club that was, at the particular point in time, they were somewhat of an obscure motorcycle club, relatively new, a club called the Mongols, which is very big and very powerful now.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yes.
They're very prominent in Southern California. And we were in the middle of a raging war, and you know, I had a military background. I had a lot of structure in my life, and I just wound up voicing my opinion a lot. And finally, the leader of the club, John, made me his vice president. Old Man John was his name. He made me the vice president, and then you know, he deferred everything to me, and you know, made me had me step in that number one spot. He kind of sat in the background for a while, but I think he knew he was suffering from cancer. He didn't tell me initially, but I think he was looking for a replacement, so he kind of pushed me into that position.
You know, now being in the club, in that outlaw life for so long, and in such a, you know, prominent club, and the pace of that, and that kind of life, do you, like, when you're involved in that, is there any time where you're slowing down and sitting home, or like, do you like was there any time to just kind of relax, or is it just go for 40 years?
Yeah, it's pretty much go, looking over your shoulder. You know, we were fighting the Mongols on the West Coast, the Outlaws on the East, in the Midwest, the Pagans on the East Coast. We were having, you know, on and off problems with the Bandidos, especially over here in Europe. And, I mean, it was a full-time job, you know. Luckily, I was somewhat of an entrepreneur, and, you know, I had a bail bond company, a tattoo shop,
right,
a t-shirt company, so I was able to financially sustain myself, but, you know, I went to Europe a lot, back and forth, went around the country, exposed myself a lot, and, you know, tried to get all the clubs to kind of sit down and bury the hatchet, so to speak, but it's a slippery slope, you know, trying to get all these strong-minded individuals to put, you know, past feelings behind them. But, you know, I felt at the time, in 1986, when I went into prison, when I got there, there was another Hell's Angel that was a president there, and I said to him, well, who do we have a problem with in here? I just wanted to know for my own safety. And he kind of chuckled. He goes, we don't fight in prison. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, we have a moratorium. Anybody that's from another bike club, if you've got a problem with them on the street, we don't bring it into the prisons.
Huh.
And I kind of took that philosophy and tried to apply it to the street. But and I was successful for a long time. But in the 2002, it all unwound again. We had a gunfight with the Mongols at Harrah's Casino. Three people got killed in the casino, and then another Hell's Angel got killed on the road later that night. And it all slowly started dissolving. And in 2011, I finally had made up my mind that I had had enough. I felt that my vision was no longer shared by a lot of the younger members. And, you know, there was things I wanted to do, and, you know, I went to the meeting and quit, but Sonny Barger and I had some personal issues, and two or three weeks later, you know, he changed my status. He wouldn't allow anybody to talk to me, and then he went on a character assassination of me about my abilities as a leader and, you know,
right.
Anything you can imagine, he came up with. And so, you know, that was one of the reasons I decided to go on the History Channel, you know, do that 6-episode series, yep, on there. And then I wrote my book, kind of stating my case. And then, you know, my book marked that they're going to make this television show out of. That was, you know, kind of a labor of love for me. It was kind of the history of the outlaw bike world. And we've updated it. It's going to be about veterans coming back from Afghanistan, and it's going to take place in Southern California. And, you know, we're going to start shooting here any time now. We're pretty much past the lockdown over here in Spain. We were locked down for 3 months.
Yep, man, that's two, pretty much.
Best solitary confinement I ever spent.
you've sampled a lot of different confinements there, so.
Yeah, I'm in a million-dollar apartment that the studio's rented for me while I'm here. And it's, I mean, it's huge. It's three bedrooms, you know, three separate rooms. It's just unbelievably big. I'm right in the center of town, and the interesting thing is the I don't know what his title would be, but he was the head of the Spanish Armada 100 years ago. He used to live in this house. It's a historic house. So they really, like, taken extremely good care of me here. And I, everybody kind of, I'm the crazy Americano, you know, around here. Yeah. They call you, instead of, they don't call you Hell's Angels here. The people see me and they go, "Oh, you're the angel from hell."
Diablo.
I go, "Well, I've been told that." something Diablo D something. I've been having a blast here. Antonio Banderas is my neighbor. He lives around the corner. He's got a theater here in town and a restaurant I frequent.
I mean, it sounds like you could start a pretty badass Spain bike club if you want over there, you know, get it going again.
Yeah.
You and Antonio, that's a good start.
I'm going to focus on the TV show. Mark the Unforgiven, it's going to come out soon, and it's going to take up all of my time, I think. It's quite an experience watching something start from a book and then go into a script and, you know, they're picking the actors and actresses. It's locations. They're going to film some of it at the in Alamaria, and that's the desert area where Clint Eastwood filmed all of his spaghetti westerns.
Nice.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Fistful of Dollars and a Few Dollars More. It was actually out there a couple of weeks ago. And it's incredible out there.
So when you got exiled, out of curiosity, how long did it take before you felt comfortable? Was it kind of instantaneous? Were you kind of looking over your shoulder, seeing if, like, the old club had decided to pull out a gripe with you? Were you able to relax when you got out?
Well, no. You know, I had went to the meeting. I quit the proper way. I've asked anybody if they had an issue with me or anything they wanted to discuss, and everybody was very cordial and said no, and, you know, we may defer to you from time to time for suggestions. And 2 weeks later I got a phone call from one of the leaders, and he said, you know, I want you to know we changed your status. And I said, what do you mean you changed my status? And he said, you're out bad, no contact. I said, okay, then you know, I'm going to take the position that if you guys approach me, you're going to hurt me. So it was very tense for several years. But, you know, I got indicted right after I quit the club. The FBI indicted me, and, you know, they tried to flip me. They offered me money and, you know, new identity and all that crap, which I wanted nothing to do with. But I went to prison, and then when I came back, you know, I lived in the same area. Everybody knew where I was. So, you know, it was tense for a while. You know, I have a wife, and my son's older now. He's, you know, he's 17. But at the time when I came home, you know, he was 10 years old. And, you know, I certainly had concerns about their safety. I didn't want them getting caught in any collateral damage, if you will. You know, if indeed these guys were going to confront me. But I think they realized that I didn't do anything. I wasn't a threat to them. I had moved on, and I wanted to do my own things. And that's basically what I told them when I went to the meeting. But they don't like you walking away. You know.
Right.
I learned the hard way. For some reason, I fooled myself, and I thought it wouldn't be as bad on me because I had such a long tenure. But you're either in or you're out in any of these organizations.
Right.
I don't think it just has to do with the Hells Angels. It has to do with the Mongols, the Outlaws, the Banditos, any of the clubs. You know, you're in. If you're out, you're out. And if you think that you have some sort of camaraderie with them, you really don't in the end. You know, like I said, you're either in or out.
you know, as a father, how do you, you know, how do you try to educate your, you know, your son and whatnot on like some of the things you did and some of the, you know, that whole world? Do you try to protect him from that, or does he basically know everything that you've kind of been through? Are you open with him about the stuff?
Yeah, I've been very open with him. You know, he's high functioning autistic. He's really smart. He's a math whiz. He's so advanced that when he in high school, the teachers didn't understand what he was doing, the formulas and stuff he was coming up with, and they. You know, we thought because of his autism that maybe he was just making this stuff up.
Right.
And we brought in a mathematician, and, you know, he called me that night on the phone, and he said, "Who taught him this stuff?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "He understands all these formulas." He goes, "Who taught him?" And I said, "He taught himself."
It's unbelievable.
He just said he truly is a mathematician. He's got a real future. So, you know, he focuses on that. I'll give you some insight into him. He's got a really funny sense of humor. He's really ultra conservative on his beliefs and his politics and whatnot. But after the History Channel wound up being their surprise hit, it was really one of the most popular shows. And after the show ended, about 3 months later, they decided to do a History Channel marathon for the whole weekend. And I was really excited about it. And I came home and I said, "Hey, Finn," I go, "they're doing a Outlaw Chronicles marathon this weekend." I go, "What do you think about that?" He goes, "Well, what do you think about it?" And I said, "Well, I'm happy." And he goes, "Do you understand what that means, right, Dad?" And I go, "No, what does it mean?" He goes, "You're nothing more than a rerun now."
Slam.
Very cold dude, man. So, you know, he has no interest in the outlaw, you know, lifestyle. You know, he focuses on his math and, you know, philosophy and whatnot. And that's fine with me.
Yeah.
And he's getting ready to make a trip over here and hang out with me for the summer. And his mom's going to come. And, you know, this lockdown has made it really difficult for travel.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what it's like in the States, because when I left, you know, everything was normal, but, you know, everything seems to be in a turmoil aside from the, you know, COVID-19, the whole country seems to be...
Oh, yeah. You picked a good time to go to Spain.
Yeah.
You picked a good time to try something else for a little while, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's interesting. When I flew, my passport's tagged, and it's probably going to be tagged for life, they told me in immigration when I got to England, and I showed them my passport, and, you know, the buzzers and whistles went off, and they go over there, stay in. And I thought, oh boy, here it comes. And I, you know, I was stuck in immigration for 4, 5, 6 hours, and then finally the supervisor recognized me from the Outlaw Chronicles, because it was very popular in England too. They had the English History Channel ran it. He goes, "I know you." He goes, "You're the Outlaw Chronicles guy." And he, you know, I showed him my letter from the studio here in Spain, and, you know, he cleared me to go. But I'll tell you, when I got to Spain, it was, you know, "Welcome, Mr. Christie." And I just walked out of the airport, and they had a car waiting there for me, and you know, they brought me here into the city center in Malaga, and it's just been one ball after another since I've been here. I don't think I'm ever going to go back. I'm looking at houses over here. I'm trying to get my wife and son to come over here. I mean, I'm really sold on Spain, and the Spanish people are so gracious. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, I had trouble in Hollywood. Some of the investigating officers actually called. I had two different agents. I had two different managers, and I had an agency I was with. I won't name any of them. But, you know, the cops actually called and said, "You really want to do business with this guy?" And what's interesting is when I got here, there's a local soccer team. They call it football here, but the soccer team the manager from the soccer team invited me out to dinner and took me to the game and asked me my theory on how to deal with strong-minded young men.
Really? That's pretty neat.
So, wow. They have a completely different attitude and philosophy over here. You know, I come from a traditional Greek family, and there's so much tradition here in Spain. I feel like I'm at home. I feel I'm back at my grandfather's and grandmother's, you know, Christmas and holiday celebrations. You know, they have big celebrations here. And
yeah.
Everybody's very friendly. And I'm starting to learn the language. I'm in the papers all the time. So the studio taught me, one of the girls teach me how to say, no tango, dinero, solo tarjeta. That means I don't have any money. Yeah. I'm using a credit card. Because everybody, all the street people are hitting me up for dough. And they stick their cups out.
I know the feeling.
I really love it over here.
I traveled over to India, it's the same thing. They see a white guy, yeah. And it's like, oh, he's got money.
They actually say this to me. Oh, you're the retired gangster from America.
the dinero diablo.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like a coffee over here. Espresso's $1.20. I can get a breakfast, which is a little a traditional omelet with a piece of French bread and a coffee for €2.80.
Wow.
So it's basically $3.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
it's just amazing. Yeah.
Now, living in an outlaw life, probably the last thing on earth I would figure reading up on you was you got to hold the Olympic torch.
Yes.
So out of curiosity, what is that feeling like? And do you recall who you got handed off from and who you handed off to?
Well, that's a really interesting story. And let me tell you, first of all, what happened was the ATF went around town in Ventura. They were going to do the security up at Lake Casitas. That's a local lake up near Ventura, about 10 minutes from the clubhouse. And they were hyping it up. They were saying, yeah, we need to keep our eye on the Hells Angels and make sure they don't bring any weapons for terrorists. And they didn't realize, they're from Akron, Ohio, and they didn't realize how integrated we were into the community of Ventura. I started getting phone calls from the city leaders and whatnot that, hey, you know, these guys are going around and they're saying you're going to cause problems. So I thought, well, look, we got to get out in front of this. So I came up with this idea to carry the torch in the Olympics. You can carry the torch for 1 kilometer if you made a donation to charity. So that's what we did. And I don't remember, I'm ashamed to say this, but I don't remember who handed me their flame. It was a man. But I was scheduled to pass my flame to a woman. And they actually changed people with her because they were afraid, because she was a woman, I wouldn't pass the flame to her.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow.
And just unbelievable, you know. And I had death threats from some white-wing extremists that, you know, said it was shameful that they were allowing me to carry the torch. And I had, you see some of the pictures with me, there's a woman and two men running with me, and they're FBI agents.
Huh.
They were security for me.
Wow.
Which is ironic, you know. But I'll tell you, it was really a thrill. I got to carry the torch. I still have the torch. I don't know if you know who Dave Mann is. He's a famous artist in the outlaw bike world. He did a big poster of me and then gave me the original oil painting that he did. You know, I've got those hanging in my house at home. But what's interesting is you could designate where you wanted the money to go. And I wanted the money to go to Special Olympics. And I don't know if you know about this. I wound up getting in a beef with Eunice Shriver, who was, you know, Eunice Kennedy. She was President Kennedy's sister.
Oh, wow.
And her and I got into it on the phone. She called me up, and she said, I want you to know I'm not sending this money to Pottstown, Pennsylvania. She goes, the money comes to Washington, to the main office, and then I decide where the money goes. And I said, well, then why is there a destination line on the form? It says, where do you want your donation to go? And I had written Pottstown, Pennsylvania, because the people had written me a really nice letter there. And she said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm going to have to sue you if you don't send the money there. And, you know, it's really funny because she said, you don't know who you're dealing with, do you? And I said to her, I go, you know, Eunice, I go, you don't know who you're dealing with. I'll see you at court. And, you know, I drug on for several years, but ultimately the Hells Angels won. And they had to send the money to Pottstown, Pennsylvania. And it was a big thing in the newspapers. The newspapers always seem to like any stories that have to do with the Hells Angels. And I think they still do. You know, we sold a lot of newspapers over the years.
Yeah. I mean, George, I could sit here and pick your brain for hours. I'm sure you've just got story after story, but I don't want to take up all your time. You have books and like I said, TV shows and all sorts of different things. What are you working on now? And if people want to check out your various different things, where should they go?
Well, you know, I have a website, georgechristy.com. And you can also look up Mark the Unforgiven. It's all over the internet. Get information on it. The streaming company is one of the biggest streaming companies in the world. And they're getting ready to announce when the show, the pilot, will be on. And we're negotiating with some huge A-list actors. So, you know, I got to get my acting chops on. These guys are, you'll just be surprised if we nail us down with them. We're negotiating right now. It's going to be amazing. But the problem with the website right now is I sold out of all my books.
Okay.
And I'm over here in Spain, and I like to sign them when I send them out. So the website's there. The store is closed. But, you know, I'm working on this show, and, you know, I'm writing another book. And it's kind of another, it's a fiction book, and I may work on another book. I did a stage show called, you know, Outlaw the Stage Show, and it was 2 hours of me talking about my life, and I'm thinking about writing a book consisting of all the dialogue from the stage show. So, yeah. I've got several projects in the works. I like to stay busy. I'm used to working all the time. I'm used to... It's great because when I first left the club, I was getting kind of bored. I kind of missed the action, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, being in this entertainment industry, there's some tough nuts in this business. So I'm back in the action.
George, final question. I don't own a bike, but I'd love to join an outlaw club. I own a Honda CRV. What would be a good icebreaker to get in there?
I think what you do is you go there, you look for the biggest guy, and make a couple of remarks about his girlfriend.
Gotcha. Writing it down. Okay.
That's a good start.
Fun.
Ask about
they have inside jokes.
yeah, ask to borrow his patch and tell him you'll bring the bike, his bike, the patch, and his old lady back tomorrow.
Gotcha. This sounds good.
Please,
I'll write you back, see how it goes.
Yeah, well, let's do another show and let's talk about what happened.
Well, I think it'll just be me and you when that happens. Cause
probably so.
I also have
well,
one.
Listen, guys.
I have one last question. When you see a motorcycle or get around motorcycles now, do you get that itch or do you just completely stay away from them?
No, I get the itch, and which I get the biggest kick out of it because there's a lot of guys over here in Spain that they aren't bike clubs, but they got their bikes looking like the Outlaws. And some of them, they may not know who I am, and I go up to try to talk to them, and they look at me like, "Hey, old man, get away from me! Can't you see I'm an outlaw?" I get the biggest kick out of that.
Yeah, I can see you biting your lip.
Okay. I don't want to piss you off, senor.
George, thank you so much for your time, man. Stay safe over there in Spain. I'm looking forward to the projects you got coming out.
Okay. I'll see you guys and talk to you again soon, I hope.
All right, so George Christie's in. He's in. I think... if anything, we got to kick out Mean Mark, or Chris Christie, at least. Get rid of them.
Well, again, it would add to the fun as, George is screaming at Chris, "I'm the only Christie." And then we'll have to come up with, some kind of nickname for him.
Like the lower Christie or the below standard Christie or...
Sub sandwich Christie.
Christie Cream, we could call the fat one,
Yeah. What do you get in the 2016 vote? We'll call him 2%, something like that.
Right. Yeah. I'm not letting him in the gang. I'm just telling you that right now. It's either me or Chris.
I'm telling you, if you let us do both, it would be a lot of fun to mock him. A lot of fun.
I'm telling you, who are you choosing? Me or Chris? I'm going to throw
Obviously, I'm going to choose you, but Thanks, pal. If you look at what I'm trying to do, we're going to have a ball, and we're going to make somebody we don't like very depressed.
So what you're saying is you have a vision for the club. You have a long-term plan.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the what was the group in your life that you identify with most? Was it ever a group of friends or a group of comics or a group of – did you ever feel close to a group of people?
I mean, it varies. I mean, through high school, not really. I've had a couple friends, but not a whole grouping. The kickball team up in Wilkes-Barre. I mean, we were a tight group.
What about the soccer team?
Well, they were kind of the same group. And kickball was better memories. And we actually won games, and then we'd have celebratory Buffalo chicken nachos versus the depression Buffalo chicken nachos.
At least kickball involves one kick at a time, not multiple kicks to try to get the ball to the goal,
Absolutely. And I guess to the degree the quote unquote original podcast, I thought we were at the beginning kind of tight, and then
we were.
That train wreck just took off after that.
Did you ever search for a group to identify with or hang out with? I felt in high school I was part of all these groups, playing soccer, playing a band, all this stuff, but I was never super close with the groups. I was a guy on the outskirts of all these groups. It was always kind of oh crap, you guys all hung out? Oh, I was free, I was always kind of just not all the way there.
Yeah, I mean, I had the small group going back to the story of the
heroin
junior
addicts.
Invention. I don't know what you call the contest. The invention one where I talked about where we got a hair dryer to melt snow. Those three guys, we were pretty tight.
I forgot about that one. That was one of the best stories ever.
Yeah, we were tight. We were pretty tight for a while, but it's the ebb and flow of then the next year, one's in one class, one's in another class, and the group kind of just breaks up. You say hi when you walk past them in the halls, but it was never never the old same way.
Friggin' Steve took the patent for the snow melter. It was never
sold
the same.
To Amazon. Bezos made $2 billion off of that.
Yeah, I mean, you look back and it's like, it's so easy to, at least you're like, it's so easy to make friends. You're just kind of like, kids, like, what do I identify with? Like, oh, I like playing. I like laughing. I like cupcakes. It's just kind of like, I don't know. There's nothing. Now it's like, it's very hard to get to, like, I feel very lucky. We met a couple of people in the neighborhood, and I honestly think it's because of the lake community here. Like, there's some things to do. So it definitely helped us meet people in the neighborhood. So I do feel lucky because, you know, I don't see my home friends that much anymore. Everyone's got kids or doing their thing, but we do have like Zoom calls. And that's one thing that came out of the pandemic that was nice, to like reconnect with them week after week and week. And, you know, I have friends who pass out every week drunk, but it is nice to talk. But like, yeah, making friends as adults is hard.
Yeah, I mean, you need that right icebreaker. Like I've said, you got to watch out for any kind of trigger points. Like, it's like even like when I'm younger and all, like you just throw out there like a joke or something, and it would at least break the ice. Either it hit and everybody's laughing, or it bombed and somebody would make a joke off of that, and then that would break the ice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now like, everything.
I like to go right up to people and call them libtards or alt-right. I like to start off with abortion jokes. Like, I just get it out of the way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, my intro is usually I go up to them, I'm like, hello, my name is Mike, and these are the religions I have no respect for. And just throw it out there. You'd be surprised. Oh, you hate those guys too. Awesome.
Yeah, in fact, it's more of a bringing together moment, right? Like, you know, like, if you identify at least one religion that they hate, you're best friends.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, once in a while you accidentally join the skinheads, but you know, once you figure that out, you just take a step back. Oops, my bad, and go on with life.
Skinhead, schminhead, whatever. You know, tomato, tomato, whatever.
Well, you know, you remember my team's former name, the Skins. So I just thought that was, just like a fan group, and then I started actually reading what they were writing. I'm like, oh, do I have egg on my face?
You're like,
you could call me the Eggman.
You're like, oh man, I get that they love their football team, but they're really aggressive. Like,
yeah,
why are they? I feel like they're not really talking that much about football on this message board.
Yeah, I think they're kind of missing the point and all. They're talking about a few things off the field that really head scratching.
Why do they hate Dwayne Haskins?
I thought it was because he couldn't throw the ball downfield. Totally different. Oh my bad.
Wow.
Oh. Confirm, remove from group. Gotcha.
I have like a group of friends that I'm thankful for, but like, it's so funny because like that group, it was always like, it always felt like I was like auditioning, like always like, oh, are they going to like call me back? And am I going to be in on like all the things that they do every week? Or am I like the alternative? Like, oh, we're having a party 3 weeks from now. You want to come? Like, do I get in on the weekly text kind of thing? You know?
Yeah, it's like a cheerleader tryout. No, you go out there, you do your full routine, you put your whole heart into it, and you just pray you get that call back. It's like, all right, we like what you do. Come to our barbecue in 2 weeks.
Well, you know what? Like, I mean, like, our gang, we're going to be pretty selective, too. Like, we might not text you back. We might beg you to bring a friend. You never know what we're going to do, so you better... You better put it all out there and make us like you, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. To get into the part-time angels, you got to be full-time with your heart when we give commands. That's the key thing.
Yeah. Broly, you got anything before we go? Or I know you have a small thing.
Right? A little weird. I am going back to what we were talking about earlier when you had to Google Doc Rivers. Do you ever get into like a little wormhole where you want to you Google something weird out of the blue just for the hell of it, and
all
you just
time.
Like keep on. I mean, I don't know why I got into this. Like, I was in the basement a couple days ago, and I was
Googling how to get out.
No. I scream for the wife, and then she yells the instructions. We're all good.
She's like, yeah. Open the door. Oh, yeah. Oh, oh. Okay.
Got then it. I Google door, and I'm like, oh.
Oh.
That was a wall. My bad. But I was down here basically dumping out the water from the dehumidifier. And I don't know why I got into this interest. I just started Googling, like, can you drink dehumidifier water? And the funny thing is, like, I'm hearing different answers. And it's a weird thing. I'm like, I'm almost obsessed. Well, what the hell's the answer? Because, you know, if this COVID goes a 360, we go right back to where we were. It's nice to know I got an extra water source.
So you think you're going to become a water harvester? Like, you're just going to harvest from the air and just drink
it? I mean, like, when things are good, I'm not going to just, like, chug from the dehumidifier. But I'm just kind of curious about something like, hey, if I don't go out and get some water, can I, like, pour some in the cat bowl or something like that?
You know what? You know, I want to make fun of you so bad, but I'm kind of interested in the answer, like, what they're...
Thank you.
But I'm also thinking, like, you know, you got this whole pumpkin spice thing going on. Mm-hmm. F it. Do water, whatever. Just drink water from
everything that water comes out of, I'm going to chug. Water tonight.
We're trying this leaky pipe. Oh, toilet water tomorrow. Tune in. I'm in every night, man, if you're doing water, whatever.
Whatever. All right, we're going to dunk the spam into the toilet water to see if it makes a difference.
Right. Right. All right, so what is the result?
I don't have a result. That's kind of the funny thing about it. Like, I read the first article, and it's like, yeah, it's just as clear as, like, rainwater, and you could use it, whatever. And then there's the next one where it's like, well, it goes through, like, the filter, so you can't guarantee what's coming through there, and it's kind of like an air conditioner, so you really shouldn't drink. There's, like, actually opposing articles, and I'm almost dying to know what the technical answer is. I mean, I'm not going to try it out myself. I'm not going to kill my cat and try to figure out this theory.
So you may have stumbled upon a hot debate on.
Yeah.
You need to find the answer out, because honestly, I have no clue. Like, here's a point where I would love to, like, sound like I was smart and tell you how dumb it was, but I have no idea. You might be able to drink dehumidifier water. Because I'm thinking, like, you're just pulling it from the air. The filter thing might be a little weird, though.
That's the honest thing. Like, in a way, you say, well, it's coming through a machine and
shit.
Coming from the air, and that's natural water. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I got to start bottling this and selling it to find out the answer.
Wait. Is this another Burlew business? Burlew's humidifier water.
Whoa. That's dehumidifier water. The D is for delicious.
It's so natural, it came from the sky.
Why are you going to dip a bottle in that nasty spring and get spring water when you've got science working with you and pulling it from the air?
Nothing nasty has ever been put into the air. Nothing.
Never.
So you take it right out of God's air, God's water, God's bottle.
Yeah. You heard of Air Jordan. This is Air Water.
You need to follow up on this, because I also want to be there when you try the humidifier water. I need to be there for this. But it is a good question. It is a good question. Burlew,
I tell you what, even if I find out it's bad, I'll get, like, a shot glass and do a drink of it.
All right. For us. Why don't you, let's make it even more interesting. Okay.
Okay.
Why don't you have your wife, you put the humidifier water in, like, a little glass, and then pour a bottled water, a faucet water, a humidifier water, and something else. You got to try to figure it out as we navigate through it. Just label the glasses on the bottom.
I like that little game and all.
Yes, ooh. Yes.
Which I mean, possibly Russian roulette.
Yeah, yeah.
Still.
Which water would kill me? You know, it's a good game.
Ah, that won't kill me. That's too refreshing. Ooh, sorry, Michael. Oh, you kidding me?
I don't think one shot of humidifier water would kill you. Dehumidifier water. But, I mean, if you drank the whole, you know, the whole container, the
whole
plastic
basket,
part.
Yeah.
Well, we have done a lot today on the podcast. We've talked about our future gang. We've interviewed a man's man, which makes me and Mike seem very petty.
Inferior.
We're still looking for a group of friends, obviously. We are diving into a very big debate on can you drink dehumidifier water? And I don't think, you know, in survival mode, Mike, as long as you have electricity, that might be your water source for, you know, a couple months. So we're gonna get down to this. Mike, anything to promote before we go?
I got to do it a couple more times. You brought it up, pumpkin spice, whatever. I've been getting a lot of great reviews. I'm getting a case of free French pudding because of my review from a couple nights ago.
There you go.
That's how insane this is.
Was that the one that wasn't very good?
Oh, yeah. That was the one that was rancid. And I tagged them, and they sent me a message. And they're like, we think you got, like, an older batch, something that went off or something like that. Now, I checked the expiration date. It was still good.
Right.
But they're saying it shouldn't be that bad. So apparently I'm getting a free case
of
Petty Pot.
Ship me up one and we could do one together. We could taste it together.
Ooh, I like. Mikey like.
I'll join an episode. I would love to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like a redemption show, you know, like these people from Chopped and all these other cooking shows get redemption.
Absolutely. That's why I gave him a second chance. They could have just said, oh, this guy's an a-hole, but no,
they definitely said that, but
oh, okay. Well, they didn't say it to me. They right. said it as they were typing, and I'm like, I can't believe this SOB is getting a free case. But it's on Facebook Live under Michael Berlew Random Stuff. Pumpkin spice, whatever. 31 days of pumpkin spice reviews.
No, it's a lot of fun. Go check that out. And I will promote a friend of the podcast, very, very funny comic, Mr. Matt Jenkins. He's one of my favorite comics. He just released a so he has a little book that he puts out, but he just released a set of 8 greeting cards. 4 jokes. There's 2 on each. Uniquely designed layout with 8 envelopes included. Perfect for upcoming birthdays, holidays, weddings, funerals, and more. The best part is 100% of the proceeds go directly to a small, struggling business, which is Matt Jenkins. No, they're really
funny. I was about to say our name.
No, they're really funny. Matt Jenkins is a hilarious comic. He's one of my favorites. He's a really good guy. And he made some really clean-looking, cool greeting cards you could send people for kind of any occasion. So I thought it was a really cool idea. So go check out Matt Jenkins. Other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. We're taking applications for the VS Bandits. Please send us an email if you would like to be in, and we will review your application. Don't worry. Undertaker's not in charge yet.
Yes, but you will have to chug a gallon of dehumidifier water to join the band.
It's a small price.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Keep the wind at your back, people. Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like. You say black. I say white, you say bar, I say bite, you say shark, I say him and Jaws was never my scene and I don't like Star Wars. You say Rose, I say Royce, you say God, give me a choice. Say Lord, I say Christ, I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein or Superman.